Our understanding of the events of 1939-45 might be improved by adding a plural and calling them the Second World Wars. The only common strand in the struggles which Germany and Japan unleashed was that they chose most of the same adversaries. The only important people who sought to conduct the Eastern and Western conflicts as a unified enterprise were Franklin Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, and their respective chiefs of staff. After the 7th of December 1941 Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor caused the United States to become a belligerent, Allied warlords addressed the vexed issue of allocating resources to rival theaters. Germany was by far the Allies' more dangerous enemy, while Japan was the focus of greater American animus. In 1942, at the battles of the Coral Sea in May and Midway a month later, the U.S. Navy won victories which halted the Japanese advance across the Pacific and removed the danger that Australia might be invaded. Through the 2 years which followed, America's Navy grew in strength while her Marines and soldiers slowly and painfully expelled the Japanese from the island strongholds which they had seized. But President Roosevelt and General George Marshall, Chief of Staff of the Army, resisted the demands of Admiral Ernest King, the U.S. Navy's CNC, and of General Douglas MacArthur, Supreme Commander in the Southwest Pacific, for the Eastern Theater to become the principal focus of America's war effort. In 1943 and 1944, America's vast industrial mobilization made it possible to send large forces of warships and planes east as well as west. Most U.S. ground troops, however, were dispatched across the Atlantic to fight the Germans. Once Japan's onslaught was checked, the Allies' eastern commanders were given enough forces progressively to push back the enemy, but insufficient to pursue a swift victory. The second-class status of the Japanese war was a source of resentment to those who had to fight it, but represented strategic wisdom. The US and Britain dispatched separate companies to Europe and Asia to perform in different plays. Stalin, meanwhile, was interested in the conflict with Japan only insofar as it might offer opportunities to amass booty.
"The Russians may be expected to move against the Japanese when it suits their pleasure," suggested an American diplomat in an October 1943 memorandum to the State Department, "which may not be until the final phases of the war, and then only in order to be able to participate in dictating terms to the Japanese and to establish new strategic frontiers."
Until the 8th of August 1945, Soviet neutrality in the East was so scrupulously preserved that American B-29s, which forced landed on Russian territory, had to stay there, not least to enable their hosts to copy the design. To soldiers, sailors, and airmen, any battlefield beyond their own compass seemed remote. "What was happening in Europe really didn't matter to us," said Lieutenant John Cameron Hayes of the 23rd Indian Mountain Artillery fighting in Burma. More surprising was the failure of Germany and Japan to coordinate their war efforts, even to the limited extent that geographical separation might have permitted. These two nominal allies, whose fortunes became conjoined in December 1941, conducted operations in almost absolute isolation from each other. Hitler had no wish for Asians to meddle in his Aryan war. Indeed, despite Himmler's best efforts to prove that Japanese possessed some Aryan blood, Hitler remained embarrassed by the association of the Nazi cause with Untermenschen. He received the Japanese ambassador in Berlin twice after Pearl Harbor, then not for a year. When Tokyo, in 1942, proposed an assault on Madagascar, the German Navy opposed any infringement of the two Allies' agreed spheres of operations, divided at 70 degrees of longitude. A Japanese assault on the Soviet Union in 1941-42, taking the Russians in the rear as they struggled to stem Hitler's invasion, might have yielded important rewards for the Axis. Stalin was terrified of such an eventuality. The July 1941 oil embargo and asset freeze imposed by the US on Japan, Roosevelt's clumsiest diplomatic act in the months before Pearl Harbor, was partly designed to deter Tokyo from joining Hitler's Operation Barbarossa. Japan's bellicose foreign minister, Yosuke Matsuoka, resigned in the same month because his government rejected his urgings to attack. Only in January 1943, towards the end of the disaster of Stalingrad, did Hitler make a belated and unsuccessful attempt to persuade Japan to join his Russian war. By then, the moment had passed at which such an intervention might have altered history. Germany's Asian ally was far too heavily committed in the Pacific, Southeast Asia, and China to gratuitously engage a new adversary. So perfunctory was Berlin's relationship with Tokyo that when Hitler gifted to his ally two state-of-the-art U-boats for reproduction, German manufacturers complained about breaches of their patent rights. One of Japan's most serious deficiencies in 1944-45 was lack of a portable anti-tank weapon, but no attempt was made to copy the cheap and excellent German Panzerfaust. Japan and Germany were alike fascistic states. Michael Howard has written, "Both nations' programs were fueled by militarist ideology that rejected the bourgeois liberalism of the capitalist West and glorified war as the inevitable and necessary destiny of mankind." The common German and Japanese commitment to making war for its own sake provides the best reason for rejecting pleas in mitigation of either nation's conduct. The two Axis partners, however, pursued unrelated ambitions. The only obvious manifestation of shared interest was that Japanese planning was rooted in an assumption of German victory. Like Italy in June 1940, Japan in December 1941 decided that the old colonial power's difficulties in Europe exposed their remoter properties to rapine. Japan sought to seize access to vital oil and raw materials, together with space for mass migration from the home islands.